Welcome to the Sound Effect Podcast, the podcast about sound effects. My name is Aspen Andersen, and I'm the founder of asoundeffect.com.
And I'm Christian Halskjær, founder of Hertz & Bits Sound Effects.
So, can you tell us a bit about who's on the show today?
Yep. For this episode, Jennifer Walden spoke to sound designer Sergio Diaz and re-recording mixer Zach Sievers about their work on the Gold Lion-winning film Nomadland.
That sounds really good. And before we get to that, let's have a quick listen to some of the new releases from the sound effects community.
Vintage anime sound effects Thunder, Rain, Wind by Moon Echo Audio was inspired by the iconic weather sounds of wind, thunder, and rain used in various 80s and 90s classic anime. Pills by Jeremy S. Bloom is all the pill sounds you'll ever need, including bottles, tabs, gels, nasal spray, spills, rattles, rolls, and much more. The Roll from the Library by MTC contains over 750 original wheeled object sound effects, recorded in much the same way you would record cars. Multiple tracks are recorded at the same time and synced to one another for easier intercutting between perspectives. Underwater Textures, Diving and Diving Equipment by Ivo Vičić Sound Libraries. Sounds of diving recorded in the sea, in a cave, and many other underwater textures, as well as scuba diving gear recorded in the studio. Succeeding in sound can be a challenge, but to help make it happen, we just launched a brand new resource overview at asoundeffect.com/supercharge. It features 12 resources to help you make the most of your career in sound, making it easier to find jobs, showcase your talents, improve your creative and sound industry skills, find and team up with others in the sound community, and much more. To find all these resources, log on to asoundeffect.com/supercharge.
Hey, this is Jennifer Walden for A Sound Effect. Today, I'm joined by supervising sound editor, sound designer Sergio Diaz, and supervising sound editor, re-recording mixer Zach Sievers. We're talking about the tremendous film called Nomadland from writer, director, producer, and editor Chloe Hsiao. The film follows Fern, who is played by Frances McDormand, on her journey into modern-day nomad living. So after losing her job and suffering the death of her husband during the Great Recession, Fern finds this community of people who live in RVs and vans and travel around the American West. It's a beautiful story about humanity and hopelessness, self-discovery, family, and joy. Hsiao takes a documentary-like approach to the film, like she's just following Fern around and capturing her life as it unfolds, oftentimes letting the soundtrack and the imagery tell the story as opposed to having dialogue narrate her experiences. Letting the soundtrack tell the story is something that both Sergio and Zach do well. Like with Sergio's work on Roma and Zach's work on The Last Days in the Desert, there's space in the soundtrack to hear the world around the character, and there's so much that can be said in that silence. Sergio, Zach, I have a bunch of questions for you both, but first I have to say that I absolutely love this film, and it's one of my favorite films in terms of sound for 2020. It is just really incredible.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
So let's talk about your collaboration with director Hsiao. What were her goals for sound on Nomadland?
Okay, what's a really good question, because our goal was to convey the audience into the real perspective of Fern's fragility. So my goal was to bring specific layers for the sound design and soundscape, because we knew that we are in this thin line between fiction and nonfiction. So we try to preserve that direction. So the idea was very clear, because she knows exactly what she wants, and the sound design was built around the edge. So that was my first goal.
I love the film's cinema verite style. There's such little dialogue. Fern's story, it's really told through her experience of what's happening in the world around her through sound, like the unrelenting noise in the Amazon facility and the quiet open spaces of the American West. First, can you talk about your approach to designing the ambiences? What were some of the things that guided your choices for what to include in the sound of the places that Fern passes through?
Yeah, of course. The treatment of the universe of soundscape should be aware of the fragility meaning. There was a thin line, as I mentioned, between fiction and nonfiction, so we did the sound design around the edge. I worked with the specific density of the ambiences in winter, in spring, in summer, in autumn. So the production sound guides me to be more accurate with my layers to contribute to the story and being more authentic. So I go deep into my library, my own recordings since many years, and I bring this to the show, because during these pandemic days it was very difficult to go and record specific sounds in this period of time. So it was very remarkable to have these sounds with me in my hand. So yeah, that's why I did a lot of treatment of the background, because I have a lot of sounds with me, and obviously with all my colleagues here and my sound editors in Mexico.
Did you have a favorite location in the film for which you designed the sound? Like, did you prefer the exterior shots with those big open expanses of the American West? Or did you prefer designing the interior locations, like the Amazon facility or the Quartzsite Yacht Club?
Yeah, for me, in every single location was a good challenge, because in my mind, I built three stages of sound design: prominent, serenity, and with silence. For example, to be prominent, all the atmospheres inside the van, Fern is always exposed to the real world with extreme weather. So for those moments, our idea was to put the audience in real perspective, having the same feeling of her fragility. Another example, but in this case is with Serenity, when Fern is walking through the camp within this warm and welcome community. There's a lot of gentle details of sound surround us. A conversation in the left side and the right side behind us. So the idea is to harmoniously go to the film and don't cross that line between fiction and nonfiction. So everything should be very, very specific. So in every single sequence, I love what I did, and sharing this experience, obviously, with Zach to contribute to the dialogue editor and cost supervisor and the final mix. So I think we did a great, great job together.
And for the conversations happening around Fern as she's walking through the RV camp, was there production dialogue, or did you build these with Loop Group? How were these conversations constructed?
Honestly, thanks to the quality of production sound, we were able to use all their sound for those moments. We just adding layers of Foley ambiences and specific effects to make it more realistic and more deep for the cinema version. So my Wolf, the production sound mixer, did great recordings for the entire film. So yeah, we did a lot of Loop Group, but in another scenes, maybe Zach can tell you more precisely.
Are you referring to the live performance scenes, like when they're in the bar and they're listening to the band and you hear all of that walla?
Exactly. For example, where is all the live music and different sequence, we use the production sound and the wild tracks that was recorded in that period. So I just added some specific Foley effects and backgrounds and wildlife if it was necessary. So yeah, everything was really, really good from production sounds. And we did loop group as well, but just to add some specific deep into the scene, no, maybe some conversation behind us or for the ride or something like that.
When they're having that really lovely sing-along around the campfire, their version of On the Road Again at the RV show, was that mainly production sound as well, or did you record any loop for that scene?
Almost entirely production sound.
Exactly.
I don't think that we ever used loop group for anything other than very specific things, very discreet voices. There were specific call-outs, or in the case of the radio, commentators and advertisements and things like that. That was the main mission for the loop. Otherwise, we were really building predominantly from the real production sound. We never did any sort of general beds or having dozens of people talking all at the same time. That was either the real sound or would have been specific textures that Sergio had in his design that he contributed.
So the live performances, like the guy and his guitar at the Quartzsite Yacht Club and the older man singing at the piano, were those mic'd as a typical live performance? Did the production sound mixer capture the feed from the board as it would have been for a live show?
Yeah, I think in the case of the older gentleman playing the piano, that was traditional boom overhead. And in the case of the live performance, that's a mixture of we hear close direct sound when we see the man playing, and then when it cuts away and Fern dances with Dave, that's the sound that's happening as the camera captures it. It's hard to understand what the two of them are saying to each other. You can't quite make it out, but you get the feeling of it. And I think that's what's so beautiful about that scene is that it couldn't be more real. That guy in the background is definitely playing the song. They're dancing to it, and it just feels so beautiful and real.
I love that it's this in-the-moment performance. I wonder if that was tricky for picture editing to make that performance match all the way through. Did you have to help smooth out those music edits?
Not so much, because Chloe edited the film and she clearly knew as she was capturing it how she wanted to edit it. It just feels like she shot every single take in this movie with a very specific idea of how she imagined it would be constructed. And I think if she didn't get it in the take, then she would get it again. But generally, she captured very few takes and knew exactly what she wanted and then was able to work very efficiently in post-production to edit the film together very quickly. And I think that's a part of the reason why the film feels so dense, but also very quick and moves at a pace that goes by so quickly. But it's also so epic in terms of how many places she goes and how many people she interacts with. Fern, I mean. And I think that's a product of Chloe's style of filmmaking.
Sergio, we talked about building the ambiences, but I wanted to go back and talk about your approach to adding these little sonic details that pull you into Fern's immediate experience and comment on how she's feeling or where she's at in that moment. One of my favorite scenes where the little details have such a big impact was when Fern visits Bob Wells's Rubber Tramp Rendezvous. She sees a friend, Linda May, and she walks over and crouches down beside her chair. So there's a man sitting behind Linda May, and he offers Fern his camping chair. There's these creaks and rattles as Fern arranges the chair so she can sit down in it. This act of kindness, it doesn't go unnoticed sonically, right? It becomes this whole event. The sounds of the chair, it conveys this feeling of impermanence, like everything these nomads own can be picked up and moved whenever and wherever. And it also highlights the kindness of these nomads. This stranger, he gives up his own chair so that Fern can sit comfortably amongst this new group of people. So that was one of my favorite little sonic moments. Were there any that stood out for you?
Yeah, there's a lot of moments, honestly, in every sequence that I bring very gentle details surround us, specifically with winds and atmospheres and with Foley as well. So we try to preserve this serenity and this harmony during the whole journey. So what I tried to preserve was this authenticity of the film. So the soundscape and the sound design should be merged with the image, the beautiful landscapes or inside the van or whatever location that we were. In every single moment, I talk with all my crew and my team just to bring ideas and be more realistic in every single sequence. But at the same time, the treatment should be very minimalistic because for me, in my mind, in this film particularly, less is more. So that's what I try to preserve, but with real good quality and specific sound layers to tell the story hand in hand with the original idea.
You know, there's another example that I thought of, which is the plate rattles. So Fern's dad had given her this whole collection of plates. You hear them clatter and rattle as she's talking about them and carefully moving them around. You gave the plates a voice, and so when Dave accidentally breaks the plates, it feels so much more crushing.
Yeah, was another character, you know, in that sequence. And honestly, there's a lot of production sound, and I added some sweeteners for there and another specific scenes. But every single moment, I did the Foley in a traditional room, and another once I did it in my home in a real space to be more realistic. In my truck, I did a lot of sounds and sweeteners for that movements inside the van and different sounds to contribute to the story.
Yeah, another big character in this film is Fern's van that she named Vanguard. It's kind of her like safe cocoon, and it's also her means of escape, and it's her means of inclusion because it's what brings her into this van culture. So for Fern's van, did you record a van like hers or just your own truck? How did you come up with its sounds and choose the ones that would best reflect the state of this van and what it means to Fern?
Yeah, we did a lot of sounds in my car and with the Foley team and with effects just to bring more ideas. So my approach was like she lives in a thin can. She was exposed with the extreme weather all the time. So every single sound should be more prominent to put the audience in real perspective of her fragility as a human being. So the idea is to put everything very clear, very in your face, and have this emotional connection with the audience as human beings. So the idea was to have every single sound inside with very high quality and be more prominent, that's my word that came to my mind. Be prominent inside the van with her.
You really feel that, especially when Fern checks out the really top end RV and everything just felt so solid and quiet and nailed down. You know, such a contrast to being inside Vanguard where everything is like rattly and run down kind
of. Exactly. That was the idea to convey that sensation. For me, the most challenging was to select the right sound elements for that moment and for the ambiences and backgrounds. In all terms, the treatment should be minimalistic in many ways. So I did a lot of explorations here and there and sharing my temp tracks with Zach during the whole process. We exchange ideas during the whole process and we bring the specific sounds that Chloe wants to hear for her film.
And so, Zach, you know, during the mix, how did you make your choices? Like, what was your guiding light when choosing which specific sounds to push over the background and when to just let the backgrounds take the lead?
Well, Chloe's style of filmmaking is obviously very documentary-like. I've been fortunate to work on a lot of documentaries over the years, and so I kind of have this idea in my head of what a documentary generally sounds like, especially a verite-driven documentary. So I think for most of the film, for me, it was just a matter of looking at every single scene and thinking about it from that point of view and grounding the sound and the spatialization of the sound and the dynamics and the color of the sound so that it always felt somewhat grounded and anchored to the production dialogue track. Because generally with documentary cinema, that's kind of the meat and potatoes of what you would hear in a doc. The amazing thing was that Sergio, in his process, would look at every scene and think about what are the other sounds happening off camera? What are the things that are influencing the characters? What are the atmospheric qualities that we can enhance? And then he would share that work with me, and I would think from a slightly different perspective and think, how can I shape and steer these things in such a way that they ultimately feel as realistic as possible, and then present an opportunity sometimes in the case of montage, like with Ludovico's music, to where we could allow the sound design to become more cinematic and more heightened. It was sort of just always a matter of balancing between the cinematic immersion and wanting to keep everything realistic at the same time. And I think Chloe provided a lot of direction for that as well. She just really had distinct ideas of this scene is going to be more realistic. And then as we would segue into more musical sections, she would say, okay, let's let this be much more cinematic. And that really helped guide the process.
What format did you mix this in? Was it Atmos? Was it 5.1, 7.1?
We pre-dubbed in 7.1 with the hope that there would be a possibility we might be able to finish in that format. Unfortunately, it didn't ultimately make sense with the workflow and with the pandemic and how the film would be seen. We ultimately decided with Searchlight that we would focus on the 5.1 mix. Sergio pre-dubbed everything in 7.1. I did the same with dialogue and music. And so we could go back to that at any point in time, but ultimately we focused our energy on the 5.1.
And how did you use that surround field to help tell the story?
The surround information is always discrete and it's very specific. And if there's something happening off camera or off screen, it's serving a very specific purpose in terms of, okay, geographically, that's placing that character over there. It's always serving the story. And then ultimately, again, with those montage sequences with Ludovico's music, we allowed those moments to really open up. And also when we're in more exterior scenes, we might feel a little bit more of the wind moving around us. We may feel cars passing behind us or beside us to really place us in the scene with Fern. And then when we move more interior, things tend to get a little bit more narrow so that it feels more realistic and we feel claustrophobic because of that. But it's pretty dynamic. Even though it's always focused on the center and it's anchored to the dialogue, it's still very dynamic from scene to scene.
I listened to the mix over headphones, and it was just amazing how alive the world around Fern felt. And there was never a moment in the film where it just felt empty, unless it was supposed to, of course.
The great thing about this new style of editing, where we're really mixing while we're editing, and the fluidity of that process, you're thinking about how it's going to sound in a theatrical space while you're working on it from the very beginning. And so I feel like Sergio was really specific with which textures were intended to be more spatially behind us or beside us. And that really created a roadmap for how we approached it in the final mix. And then the final mix became more about making macro big picture choices in terms of how it would just feel from beginning to ending instead of from scene to scene, which I think Sergio did a really wonderful job of crafting those specifics as he went along in the sound design and edit process.
What was the most challenging scene for you to mix and what went into it?
I would say probably there's a really beautiful scene between Fern and Bob Wells at the very end of the film. And if you look in the distance, you can see there are some people out riding around in ATVs, and they're just blazing past the screen from left to right, and you can see these huge dust clouds. It also happens to be a really emotional moment in the film when we learn something really tragic about Bob Wells's character, when there's a sense of closure with Bob and with Fern and with RTR and Fern's journey and where she's going next. We had a lot of ATVs and a lot of wind in that scene that we were competing with. And it's a very sparse scene. Chloe really wanted the design in that moment to take a step back and to allow the dialogue and the performances to really shine through and just live there in that scarce, minimal desert environment. And so that for me was particularly challenging from a dialogue point of view. You can't deny the fact that those ATVs are driving back there and it's part of the track. And we're not going to ADR that because of performance and wanting to maintain that. But at the same time, wrangling all these different sounds in such a way that it just creates this really delicate consistent scene that allows you to fall into it and really appreciate the story.
So just one more question for you guys. What would you want other sound pros to know about the sound of Nomadland?
For me, the sound design always goes hand in hand with the original idea. And if you stay true to it, it will tell you exactly everything you want to convey. So that's what I share everything, this process with my colleagues, with my editors, with my crew, just to preserve and have a good exploration and good proposal for the director and make it happen. The idea is the most important. So we are accomplices to the director. So that's what I love to do and preserve during the post-production sound process.
I couldn't say it better myself.
Sergio, Zach, thank you guys so much for taking some time out to have this chat with me about the sound of Nomadland. And once again, I have to say that I absolutely love your sound work on this film, and I won't be surprised to see your names in the Best Sound category for Oscars 2021 for Nomadland. So best of luck to you there.
Thank you, Jennifer. That's very kind.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
If you're looking for more podcasts about sound, check out these greetings from our friends in the audio podcasting community, and you'll find them all at audiopodcast.org.
Hi, this is Michael Helms, host of the Location Sound Podcast. Recently, I spoke with production sound mixer and sound designer Pamela Shing Berman, based out of Los Angeles, California. She talks about pivoting during COVID-19 and producing content for She Votes and also her involvement with women in audio. Check out the latest episode.
Hi, this is Emily from Level with Emily Reese. Our newest episode features two composers, Gary Scheiman and Nikolai Stravinsky. You might know Nikolai from The Witcher 3 or Gary from Bioshock. They wrote a score together for the game Metamorphosis. Hear them talk about it on the newest episode of Level with Emily. Learn more at levelwithemily.com or patreon.com/level.
Hey there, this is Tim from Tonebenders. Check out our latest episode featuring the sound team behind the hit series, The Mandalorian. They tell us about making the sounds of lightsabers and seismic bombs, and they discuss their approach to creating the endless array of new creature sounds that the Star Wars universe conjures up. Listen wherever you find podcasts or at tonebenderspodcast.com.
I'm Dallas Taylor, host of 20,000 Hertz, a TED podcast that reveals the untold stories behind the music and sounds around us. We've uncovered the monumental impact of the Roland 808 drum machine.
There was no drum machine that had a kick drum that sounded like that.
We've pulled back the curtain on the music of Hamilton.
When I'm mixing, I'm like really a part of the show, like an intimate, intricate cog in what makes Hamilton work.
We've revealed how the Seinfeld theme song was recreated for every single episode.
These were elements that could be modularly manipulated to fit each monologue.
And we've explored how music mastering can change how you hear the music you love.
It's called the loudness war because it's basically a sonic arms race.
Subscribe to 20,000 Hertz right here in your podcast player. I'll meet you over there.
That's it for this episode. A big thanks to Jennifer Walden for doing the interviews and to Sergio Diaz and Zach Sievers for being on the show. Be sure to subscribe to the A Sound Effect podcast at asoundeffect.com/podcast. Thanks a lot for listening and see you next time. Take care.